Welcome to Journal Club for January 12th, 2025. I'm Malcolm Diggs. For 30 years, most people assumed that the silver-backed chevrotain was no more, that it had gone extinct. This tiny ungulate is native to Vietnam and looks like a cross between a mouse and a deer. They even call it the mouse deer. The 20th century was not kind to the chevrotain. Rapid development pushed it out of much of its native habitat, and it was thought that hunters killed the last one sometime in the 90s. So, imagine the conservation community's surprise when, in 2019, footage of a silver-backed chevrotain walking around in its natural habitat was captured by researchers. How? Through the use of camera traps. Camera traps are small boxes that researchers will strap to a tree or a post somewhere out in the wilderness. The box will traditionally contain a battery, a camera, some kind of sensor that triggers the shutter, and some way to store the photos. Researchers set the traps up, leave for a while, then come back and collect the footage hours, days, or months later. And over the last few years, camera traps have gotten pretty fancy. These days, they may have sophisticated sensors and triggers, they might have night vision modes, they might have solar power, extended batteries, or camouflage casings, and sometimes they even have a radio or wireless connectivity to other sensors, or to a home base, or to a satellite. And as the hardware has gotten more sophisticated, so has the software that processes all the photos and videos that the boxes capture. Sometimes this software runs on board the camera box, on something like an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi. But for battery conservation reasons, most of the heavy-duty processing tends to happen after the media is exported out of the trap and into a program that's running on a workstation or a server. The first thing these types of programs need to do is scan through all the photos and every frame of all the videos and give the user a list. This list specifies which photos and which frames out of thousands or hundreds of thousands might contain the animal you're looking for. There are two main approaches for this, one-step classification and two-step classification. One-step classification is where a whole image classifier, a WIC, a WIC, processes the entire image or frame, including the entire background, and makes predictions based on all visible elements in the photo, without isolating the specific object or region of interest. Two-step classification is an approach where an object detector attempts to identify any prominent object in the frame and returns the coordinates of the bounding box that encompasses that object. And then on the second pass, an image classifier looks at the image but only looks within the bounding box, the region of interest, that was determined in the first step. Both of these approaches work and both are quite popular, but the ML community has been split over which option is better. Today's paper is from a research team at Google, and they're trying to put an end to that debate. They set up a shootout between these two types of techniques and tried to determine a winner. We're going to cover how they ran their experiment and, of course, the results that they obtained, but first, we need a bit more backstory on the debate happening here. Why does each camp on either side of this debate claim that their technique is better than the other one? Advocates for the one-step classifier argued that it is computationally efficient and avoids the complexity introduced by integrating an object detection stage first. By processing the entire image in a single pass, it eliminates the need for separate models or additional pre-processing, making it faster and simpler to deploy, especially in resource-constrained environments. But it's more than that. They also argue that a whole image classifier can leverage contextual information in the background, which might help identify species whose habitats or behaviors are closely linked to specific environments. That being said, the primary weakness of a single classifier is that it struggles with small or distant objects. These may occupy only a small portion of the frame, and this leads to diluted features and reduced accuracy. Additionally, a whole image classifier is more prone to learning spurious correlations from irrelevant background elements, such as camera overlays or vegetation patterns. This can reduce how generalizable the model is to diverse locations and environments. Supporters of the two-step approach claim that cropping the image around the region of interest reduces the noise that would otherwise be introduced by irrelevant background features. This leads to higher accuracy, especially for small or distant objects. They argue that this approach is also more effective for long-tailed datasets, where rare species may be easier to identify after cropping. It's also more effective, they say, for multi-object images, as in images with several animals in them, as the detection step naturally separates individual objects for later classification. The primary weakness of the two-step method is its computational overhead. It requires running both an object detector and a classifier, which makes it much more resource intensive. Additionally, its accuracy depends heavily on the quality of the object detector, not only the classifier. That's the debate in a nutshell. So, how did these researchers put these ideas to the test? Well, they started by pulling three datasets. One, Wildlife Insights, WI. This is a private dataset with about 40 million images. The images are geographically diverse, and there is a long-tailed distribution of species in the photos. Two, LILA, L-I-L-A, the Labeled Information Library of Alexandria. This is a public dataset with about 15 million images. They are less geographically diverse than WI, but provide a large-scale, publicly reproducible dataset for benchmarking. And three, iWildCam. This is a smaller public benchmark dataset with about 200,000 images. This set is designed for standardized evaluation across both in-domain and out-of-domain settings, which we'll talk about more later. Using these datasets, the researchers trained models for both approaches and conducted a series of experiments to evaluate their performance. Here are the metrics they used. The first metric, overall weighted F1 score, measures the performance of each model across all classes, including the blank category, that's images without detectable animals. This metric was weighted by the frequency of each class in the test dataset, ensuring that common classes had a proportional impact on the final score. To assess how well the models classified individual species, the researchers computed the species-level weighted F1 score. This metric excluded blank, human, and vehicle classes and focused solely on non-blank animal categories. It evaluated both precision and recall weighted by class frequency to reflect how well the models performed on species of varying prevalence. The macro averaged F1 score was calculated as the unweighted average of F1 scores across all classes. Unlike the weighted metrics, this measure treated all classes equally, regardless of their frequency in the dataset. It was particularly important for evaluating how the models handled rare classes, which might otherwise be overshadowed by the dominance of the blank class in weighted metrics. The authors also wanted the ability to distinguish between blank and non-blank images, since that's a critical requirement for camera trap workflows. For this, they calculated the blank F1 score, measuring precision and recall specifically for the blank class. This metric ensured that improvements in species classification accuracy did not come at the cost of misclassifying blank images. The models were also evaluated on their ability to generalize to new geographic locations. This is where the iWildCam dataset came in handy, because it provided separate test splits for in-domain and out-of-domain images. In case you're wondering, in-domain means the test images come from the same locations and camera setups as the training data. Out-of-domain means the test images are from entirely new locations or camera setups not seen during training. Accordingly, the authors created two separate F1 scores for each scenario, the ID in-domain F1 score and the OOD out-of-domain F1 score. For the WI and LILA datasets, the researchers evaluated models on both filtered and unfiltered versions. Filtered datasets are ones that had undergone pre-processing to remove label noise. Unfiltered datasets contain raw, noisy labels simulating real-world conditions. And after running each model through all these tests, they also tested ensemble strategies that incorporated both whole image classifiers and crop classifiers. For example, one ensemble strategy used the whole image classifier as a backup for cases where the object detector struggled, while another combined predictions from both models to optimize accuracy. The performance of these ensembles was evaluated using the same metrics to determine whether they provided a meaningful improvement over standalone approaches. So, without further ado, what were the results? What was best, one-stage classification, two-stage classification, or a mashup of both? It was a landslide victory. Across all datasets and evaluation metrics, the two-stage classification consistently outperformed the one-stage classifier. How much better was it? A lot, about 25% better. The improvement was especially pronounced for long-tailed datasets and images where the target animal was small or distant. That being said, in terms of computational efficiency, the one-stage approach did maintain an advantage, as it required fewer processing steps and resources. But interestingly, the ensemble approach did not significantly outperform the two-stage classifier in most scenarios. It did occasionally offer marginal gains, but they were not consistent enough to justify the added complexity. Ultimately, the two-stage pipeline proved to be the most robust solution for maximizing accuracy across a diverse set of conditions. So, did these researchers finally put this debate to rest? Not entirely, but pretty close. Their findings provided significant clarity on when and why a two-stage classification pipeline outperforms a one-stage approach, which is pretty much any time that resource constraints are not an issue. Overall, this just underscores the importance of tailoring your pipelines to the context you're working in and the resources at your disposal. If you'd like to read more of their analysis or get a hold of the datasets they used, I'd recommend that you download the paper. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. Hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.